Good morning to everybody. Hope you are all happy to be out this morning, another Sunday morning service. I'm excited to share what God has laid on my heart, and I hope you all can be blessed and inspired as well. So the title of my devotional is, Are You an Overcomer? Do you ever feel that voice inside you tell you that you're no good? Or that no one cares about you? Or maybe you can't do anything right? Or that you're going to mess up? And it all leads to, why even try? It won't turn out. William Cornelius Van Horn was the son of an American dirt farmer, born in Illinois. As a young man, he was given the responsibility of building the largest, toughest railroad ever made, a task many considered impossible. They were explorers, surveyors, engineers. They traveled by boat, raft, pack horse, and foot. They passed through landscapes like of nothing else on earth. They fell through ice, slipped from cliffs, died in rock slides, and disappeared in rapids. They followed countless rivers and many promising routes that ended nowhere. For years, they searched for a passage through the vast mountain wilderness of Western Canada. Some worked too late in the fall and were ambushed by snowstorms. Trapped in makeshift shelters, they struggled to survive winters that could last 6 months. After 20 years of exploration, spanning hundreds of thousands of square miles, at least 40 men had died and still no ideal route through the mountains. The province of British Columbia had joined Canada on the condition that it would be connected to the east by a transcontinental railway. Out of desperation, the federal government started construction beside a small church along the Fraser River in the spring of 1881. The first few miles on the floodplains were easy going for the builders, at least until the line turned east into the Fraser Canyon. Hard granite walls towering 3,000 feet brought construction to a painful crawl that would last over 6 years. 10,000 men worked in the Fraser Canyon in the early 1880s. 6,500 were Chinese. They blasted night and day, drilling tunnels into the granite rock, carving roadbeds on the side of vertical cliffs. Working with hand tools and black powder, they averaged 5 feet a day. In the canyons, 6 men died for every mile of track laid. We can only glimpse the courage of these men in the work they left behind. By 1882, the work had moved out of the canyon and east along the Thompson River as the railroad climbed up the central plateau of British Columbia. Here the rock gives way to soft sandstone. It made for easy construction, but this kind of landscape absorbs little water. Torrential rains made mudslides that can bury the men alive. Here, engineers and track layers encountered Shuswap Lake. They merely planned to bridge it and go on, but when they lowered weights connected to 400 foot of rope, they never reached the bottom. The lakes would simply be too deep to cross. Trains would have to take the long route around as they do to this day. Where ground was flat and going was easy, Van Horn pressed hard to make up for lost time. They were Canadians, Americans, British, Europeans, and Asians. They froze in the bitter winter and toiled in summer heat. Eaten raw by insects, they worked with bare hands, laying an average of 6 miles of track a day. In 1882, nearly 500 miles of track were laid in a single season, a world record and an enormous sense of pride for the workers. At the railroad town of Revelstoke, the canyons and lakes lay behind, relatively easy going compared to the Selkirk and Rocky Mountains looming ahead. General Manager Van Horn was an amateur geologist, talented artist, and accomplished violinist, though he was best known as an all-night scotch-drinking poker player. Perhaps his biggest gamble, however, lay in the route chosen east of Revelstoke. Van Horn, the CPR, and the government were anxious to keep powerful American railroads from moving into southern Canada. There were two routes through the mountains being considered, a northern route recommended by surveyors and a southern route considered much more difficult by everyone. A fateful, perhaps reckless decision was made to gamble with the southern route. There, no yet known passage through this part was known. An American surveyor known by the name of A.B. Rogers convinced many, including Van Horn, that he could find a pass through the southern part called the Selkirk Mountains. The future of the Canadian Pacific was now in the hands of two Americans, one a brilliant leader and gambler, the other a stubborn surveyor considered wildly eccentric. Rogers and his guide only traveled in the spring and summer months. They found that humans of any kind had almost never ventured among these almost vertical slopes. In the summer of 1882, when Rogers declared he had discovered a viable railroad pass, he did not fully appreciate the nature of the beast that would come to bear his name. When surveyors and track layers arrived at the Selkirk Mountain the following season, they were appalled at what Rogers had called a pass. They would have to build massive looping trestle bridges to give distance to lessen the steep climb of the mountain face. For the men working here, it was a bad omen. The trestles were frail and prone to fire in summer and avalanches in the winter. They were soon replaced with stone pillars, but those too were soon abandoned. In February of 1910, the chief engineer wrote to Van Horn, "There has been a terrible accident. Many men died in the valley of the Illisilibus. The rest are afraid." In the early years, this short section of the track would threaten the very survival of the entire railway. Some thought Rogers had been more than eccentric. His ego had led him to a route of total madness. Railroad surveyors seek the lowest route through the mountains. In Rogers' pass, they use side canyons to build loops to give the railroad more distance to climb the mountains. It would take the CPR 100 years and 14 miles of tunnel to finally escape beneath the original railroad line. The folly that was Rogers' pass. The deep cliffs and valleys of the eastern face of the Selkirk Mountains were no easier for the builders. As the trains begin the long downhill journey, they will cross a series of great bridges. At the time of construction, these bridges were known to be the highest structure in the world. At the eastern foot of the Selkirks, trains often pause for service at the town of Colton. The Rocky Mountains lay ahead. This section of track is known as the most difficult in all of railroadry. As the years passed, runaway and exploding trains, avalanches and rock slides would claim the lives of hundreds of men. When construction began, few could have imagined the terrible sacrifices the southern route would entail. Let's turn in our Bibles to 1 Samuel 17, verse 26. And David spoke to the men that stood by him, saying, "What shall be done to the man that killeth the Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him after this matter, saying, "So shall it be done to the man that killeth him." And Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men of Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why comest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and thy naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." And David said, "What have I done? Is there not a cause?" And he turned from him toward another, and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with the Philistines." And Saul said to David, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." And David said unto Saul, "Thy servant keep his father's sheep." And there came a lion and bear and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock, and I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. The servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put a helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded up his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them." And David put them off him. And he took his staff in his hand, and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in a script. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistines came, and drew near unto David. The man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, "Am I a dog, that thou comest to me with a staves?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air, and to the beasts of the field." Then said David to the Philistine, "Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, I will give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." And it came to pass, when the Philistines rose and drew nigh to meet David, that David hastened and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag, and took thence a stone, and slang it, and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran, stood upon the Philistine, and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof, and slew him, and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. That's a story that we hear, we know as a child. We hear it from time to time. And so often with Bible stories, it's so easy just to skim over the top and you think, I know that story. What's the significance? There's a lot of significance when you think of this story. The title of my message is, Are You an Overcomer? What is it that stands in your way that is preventing you from being an overcomer? What is it in your life that needs to be overcome? Why so often do we stay in a position of defeat? The tract layers and surveyors working under Van Horn in 1883 had a daunting task laying before them. Staring into the mouth of the Selkirk Canyon, they knew the obstacle that lay before them. At the hands of a gambler and a surveyor thought to be wildly eccentric, these workers could have given up before the start and said impossible. When David heard about Goliath and this 10-foot man, and that no one else was willing to go after him and fight him, he could have stayed with his sheep, continued with his normal lifestyle, and said, if they can't, I can't either. The same applies to each of us today. It doesn't matter what situation you're in or what troubling thing stands in your way. It doesn't matter, you know, what parents you have. Often people use parents as an excuse. Well, my parents aren't what they should be. My dad's not consistent. Or my mom, you fill in the blank. Maybe you can say your boss. Or often people use work as an excuse. Well, I'm too busy with my work. I can't do this or I can't do that. It's easy to use simply, this is my lot in life. This is how I was born. This is my lot in life. But all these things end up being just an excuse, things that hinder us from becoming that overcomer that God is wanting us to be. So the question is, how do we become that overcomer? And we can use David as a perfect illustration. What did David do? So number one, David recognized that there was an issue and he took action. He saw there was a problem. And instead of sitting in his comfort zone where he was, he took action. Number two, David was criticized. The people said he couldn't do it. David stopped what he normally did. He changed what he was normally doing. And he went to make that change. And you know, so often I've heard different people say this. When we pursue something, or say there's something in our life that requires a change, that we're going to have to do something drastic to change, often when we do that, many times there can be criticism that follows. People are looking on from the outside and they want to discourage you. Number three, David had learned from past victories that he can overcome and that God is the giver of victory. David remembered the bear and the lion, and that God gave him the victory with those things. So thinking on that, and how strong his God is, he had the confidence to go face a giant. We will either develop a pattern of victory, or we're going to develop a pattern of failure. Number four, David tried the way of the average soldier. He put on the armor. He tried what the others were doing. And I don't know if that's the best example, but it didn't work. And what immediately came to my mind when I thought of that specific illustration is, so often we get distracted by books and videos and podcasts. And often these are things that people lift up as, this is a must read or this is a must watch. This is something you've got to see. And there's a place for those things, but those things, there's so much of it today that it turns into a distraction from pulling us away. It so often can keep us from being focused on what we really need to be focusing on. Also, some of us load up, you know, WhatsApp statuses with amazing sayings. And there's millions of amazing sayings out there, but there's no way we can contain millions of sayings. They end up being distraction. And honestly, for myself, those things, in a sense, I don't think they've ever actually inspired me. And in fact, I've always seen them things as a distraction because, oh, they're so inspiring, so motivating while you read them. But real life is real life. David went with a purpose, and he went with a plan. He didn't waste time trying to become a soldier. He got rid of that stuff. Number 5, David precisely and purposefully chose his weapons he would use to win his giant. In order to be an overcomer, we must precisely pick and choose what weapons we will use, and we have to stick with it. And this too often is where we go wrong. We get distracted, we get sidetracked, we allow things to take us away from that purpose, that mark where we're going. This past week we had the boys' camp back at Camp Satara, and there was Tim had a topic for us, and it was really good, and it really got a lot of engagement with the boys and stuff. But one of them said, well, you don't understand, because, you know, where yous come from, yous are different than us. And that's 100% true. But, and he said, you don't understand, in our situation, it's so hard. And I understand. But the thing is, God has a way, God has the weapons, and God has a plan. It comes down to each us individually. Are we willing to choose that? Are we willing to have faith and trust in the Bible and pick those weapons out of God's word that it takes to overcome these obstacles, these difficult things that lay in our way? If you're going to be an overcomer, you will need to be a determined, disciplined, hard worker. There's no exceptions. If you want to be a Christian, if you want to be victorious, there's no exceptions. Number 6, David took what he prepared and went and met face to face with his giant. So David, he went to the brook and he precisely, specifically chose out those small stones and his sling. And then when he was prepared and when he was ready, when he had what he knew he needed, he went and faced his giant face to face. David had a plan. He took courage and then he followed through. Number 7, David took the giant's sword and cut off his head. He brought closure to the battle. He ended it. He said, I'm finished. He said, I'm done letting this obstacle, this giant, be a big hindrance. He took the sword. He didn't just take the obstacle in the way and just knock it down. and said, okay, I knocked you down now, I can go on. He brought closure to it. He hacked its head off. He said, I'm done with you. And that's the same we need to do with the things in our life. We can't push them aside. We can't fight them to an extent. We have to hit them hard and then be finished with them. But that doesn't mean that our battle is over. Our approach to conquering needs to be like David's. He ended the giant. He was victorious. This doesn't mean our battles are over, but it does mean that each victory will help you another battle to win. Van Horn completed the impossible railroad in half the time required by the contract. The son of an American dirt farmer, he rose to become one of the greatest in Canadian history. But Rogers Pass in the Valley of the Illisilibus, the legend of Van Horn's railway, could have had a very different outcome. Their names are worn from wood and stone and lost forever. They were young and strong. With bare hands, they endured the unimaginable hardship. The route chosen was nearly impossible, but they had faith in the future and they found a way. They overcame the obstacle that they were faced with. They were overcomers. Are you willing to be an overcomer? Do you have faith in the future? And are you willing to overcome the obstacles it takes to leave a Christ-like legend for those who follow after? God bless you.